We're speaking now with Mark Sauter. He is our District 1A state representative, and he's getting ready for the Idaho legislature. Mark, thank you for taking time to speak with us.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for giving me an opportunity to speak. So thanks, Chris.
You bet. And you are in Boise as we speak, I believe, right?
I am. Yeah.
I tell you what, I want to launch into a bunch of the things that I know the legislature will be dealing with and some of your bills that you're specifically interested in yourself. But tell us, how do you spend the off season? What's that like for a legislator?
Mostly I'd say I try and listen and follow the issues in our district, follow up on a lot of different constituent questions and concerns. And also kind of keep a running list of things that we might want to address during the legislature, you know, i.e. is there a statute change that would help things? So keep an eye for that kind of, you know, what problem, the short of it is, what problems do we see in our area and what solutions, if any, are there for those different issues?
Mm-hmm.
And then also apply, you know, so what can I do to deal with that? Whether it's talk to people, provide information, direct them in the right direction, to ask their own questions, or in some cases, you know, start writing a bill to address an issue that may help our district and then also that would be applied to the rest of the state and would work. So kind of a lot of things to kind of think about.
I believe that you and Senator Jim Woodward had at least a couple, maybe a few different town halls during the course of the spring and summer and fall. Did you glean some good information out of those?
Yes. Whether it's a, you know, I think you mentioned something about some other current issues that I may be working on. Whether it's a property insurance issue that people are having, or people in our district, some of our mental health or behavioral health providers have contacted me and asked me questions about state budget cuts and, you know, what will happen with that, or Medicaid expansion, you know, just the condition of our healthcare system itself and how we're doing on providing everyday healthcare for the people who live in our area. All those things come up in different meetings, and then you have to sort out and say, well, is there something that I can do about that? And, you know, just kind of drafting things out and also talking to other legislators. I have a kind of a constant stream of communication with them and seeing what's new in their area, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we're just a couple days before the 2026 legislative session begins as we're recording this, because it actually got underway Monday as this recording is going to air. And one of the biggest issues that the legislature is going to wrangle with this session, from all I have read, is how to deal with the upcoming budget deficits. The numbers I've seen is the state is facing a projected $40 million deficit for the current fiscal year, which ends June 30th. But then for the coming fiscal year that the legislature will largely be dealing with, it balloons up to a lot, between six to even up to as much as $1 billion for the coming fiscal year. So what do you see as solutions to that the legislature might be pursuing?
Well, if we just talk about what's in front of us today, kind of on our dashboard, yes, there's a projected, you know, $40 million shortfall. You know, like all problems, you know, you want to get down to the root of it and say, okay, are we really having a problem? And are we really, you know, how does this look like? You know, how will this play out? I'm sensing that right after the first of the year, you know, which is now, we'll start to get reports from all the different divisions and bureaus of the state and find out where they are financially. It looks like now their spending will be in line with their budget, or whether they will be over as the case for the Idaho Department of Lands is, they're, I think they've already said they're $10 to $15 million underwater because of firefighting costs last summer. So I think we need to get current information for one, and then we can start to make some adjustments. It, most of those things will come from JFAC, so it will really be a matter of me looking at it and trying to get the information that we're provided and then trying to make the best decision we can for our district. So we don't, you know, the other part of it is it'll be a vote that comes to us on the floor of the House, but JFAC will do quite a bit more work on it before we ever see it or get it. So, but I'm, you know, we all stay in touch in the Capitol. So I'm very interested to know where we are, what the current status of all the bills are, and the different accounts. The state does have rainy day funds that are available, you know, quite a bit. I think it's approximately 25% of what we annually spend for state expenditures we have in rainy day funds. However, it's, as the Lieutenant Governor said, you know, a few weeks ago, this isn't a rainy day, and it's not exactly, you know, it wasn't a crisis in our state. So how do you deal with that? Do you really work on cuts versus using rainy day funds? So those will all get worked out here in the next few weeks, I think, and then we'll have something to vote on. And I'm anxiously awaiting to see what more information we have and what will be, you know, what's the bill going to look like that we need to vote on.
So numbers I've seen reported in the Idaho Capital Sun is that there's going to be an actual cost to the state for complying with all the tax changes from the Big Beautiful Bill Act. That the Trump administration ushered through Congress. So the, I guess that the legislature has to decide if they're going to comply with all those tax changes. And that's a big chunk, $200 to $284 million is estimated to be the cost of that. How is that likely to play in the legislature? You know, this idea that should we comply with all those tax changes in the in that bill, or should we take some savings from that?
Well, you're that's a great point, Chris. Thank you. We have the, I believe the term used is conformance, and it's up to the state to conform to federal tax policy. If and we've not always done that, is my understanding. Historically, we generally do, but we haven't always. But in front of us right now, the I'll call it four different issues that are all part of conformance, and that is tax on tips, tax on overtime. I think there's a auto loan, auto financing interest, you know, deduction that people can take that we have to decide on. And then the other, the big ticket item, those are probably $10 million for tips, approximately $10 to $20 million for overtime, and I've heard up to $20 million for auto loans. But the other issue is the business and the investments for business, and it's really how they write them off, whether it's writing them off in 1 year, which is what the Big Beautiful Bill allows, or to write it off over a period of 5 years. Which is more like what we've budgeted. So how we approach all four of those issues will determine how we look financially for fiscal 2027. Also, if our revenues remain flat, then we may be in the same predicament in 2027, i.e. we're $40 to $50 million short in our forecast. So we certainly have cuts that we're going to have to look at. Philosophically, I think it's a good question for the Capitol and the electeds on do we want to mirror the federal tax plan, and you know what does that do for our competitive edge or staying competitive with the other states that are around us? Utah, for instance, if businesses are looking at locating someplace, do we want to conform and or do we want to give up a competitive advantage and not? So again, we'll have to look at all the numbers and get all the forecasts, and then we can make our decision. I think there will be quite a lot of interest in the kind of the personal exemptions. I think the adopting the no tax on tips and the no tax on overtime and the auto loan interest, I think those are going to be very interesting for most of the representatives, because that hits everybody at home. For the investment part of it, I'm not sure what the feeling of the group will be. I want to wait and look at it. I certainly want our state to stay competitive, because we've done very well with growth of new business. But I'm waiting to see, you know, kind of what we get to vote on and how it looks for our area. So that's how right now that's how I'm looking at it.
Okay, one more question on this before we get on to another one. So these budget deficits that are projected are coming after the legislature over the past 5 years passed a series of income tax cuts. And obviously, one way to meet the deficit is to cut services that the state provides. The other way is to restore some of those taxes that were cut. Any prospect of that happening, or where would you stand on that?
I'm apprehensive about raising taxes. I mean, that's pretty much, I think, across the board where most people, how a lot of people feel. I won't argue that there's certainly a thought that the legislature has done some self-inflicted damage by lowering the taxes a little bit too much on the income tax. And it's gone from 7%+ to 5.3%. And maybe we overdid it last year. So how do you level that out? From being around the other legislators, I don't get that feeling that there's a lot of, you know, a lot of support for raising taxes back up to what it was. I think it's more, how are we going to weather this? Because they don't think the economy's performing like it should or it could. And, you know, do we make an adjustment as far as spending goes now and looking at all of our different other revenue sources and let that tax, the tax cut that we did catch up? So, but I haven't, when I'm around other people in the Capitol, I haven't heard a number of people saying, well, we really ought to reconsider that tax, tax cut from last time, you know, from last session. Mm-hmm. So,
those came when the state had been experiencing some really big surpluses in the budget.
Right.
Yeah. So I guess finding the sweet spot, right?
Right. And but it's tough when it, and you know, there's a saying, you know, I've heard several times, and that is, you don't get in trouble with what you do when times are tough. You potentially have trouble when you're spending during good times, because you're shielded or buffeted by some of those, you know, kind of good breaks you're getting in the economy. So we need to make some adjustments. There's just no doubt about that. The question is, how drastic we make them and how long, you know, if we want to look long-term and try and not make too many adjustments that go the other way. So be careful.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, next question issue that the state maybe is going to deal with. I don't know if the legislature is going to deal with this or not, but a lot of Idahoans are going to be dramatic increases in their health insurance plans through the, you know, the Affordable Care Act that Idaho actually is part of. And numbers I've seen reported are that there's more than 120,000 Idahoans that are enrolled in these plans on the state health care exchange. And some of them, a good chunk of them, as subsidies are expiring, have actually expired already, are going to see increases in their in their premiums of more than double. And the your Health Idaho executive director says he expects, that's Pat Kelly, he 20,000 Idahoans are going to just cancel coverage because they won't be able to afford it. Now, this is something that's playing out on the national stage right now. I know Congress is looking at whether or not to step back in and restore those lost subsidies. But do you see any action coming out of the Idaho legislature on this?
Well, I sat in a DOGE meeting in December where there was discussion about what to do with Medicaid expansion, because there is some belief that that's a major part of our shortfalls, and you know, what do we do with that? I'm very concerned that of what that would do to our local healthcare system, to our rural health, our rural hospitals, to everything from behavioral health systems. And I'm not alone. Our state sheriff's association has pointed out that behavioral health is not something that you just cut, that you're going to pay for in other places. Just like shorten our rural hospitals on people that are insured, they're going to provide that care anyway. And, you know, a few years ago, the state dropped their catastrophic health care payments to hospitals and counties. And there's another system that they had to reimburse counties for indigent care. And both of those have been dropped off with the advent of Medicaid expansion. So without to drop Medicaid expansion, even though I think people would look at it and say, well, there you go, there's a bunch of money there. What are the other costs that our communities are going to absorb one way or another? So I think you really have to look at all that and see what Medicaid expansion really, what problem it really solves by stopping it. So I'm anxious to hear all about it and hear the explanations of that. But, you know, looking at the unintended consequences, I think, is going to be important. And especially for us, I mean, we already have a pretty fragile healthcare system in our district. Boundary County's hospital is pretty financially strapped. I would say, I'll just say, they're very careful with their finances, and they and the same with our local hospital. Medicaid provides a considerable amount of funding, so we have to be careful about dropping insurance because Medicaid money goes to our hospitals. So we need,
as well, the folks that are using Medicaid, they turn to other healthcare, which might be just walking in the emergency room.
Yeah, that's my point, Chris. The federal EMTALA regulations direct rural hospitals to treat patients and to stabilize patients, and whether it doesn't matter if they have insurance or not. So We can cut insurance and cut some of these benefits, but those that need them are still, you know, they're tasked with using them. When you have somebody that's sick in your family, not having insurance, you know, most people want to make sure they get that care. And the care in the emergency room is some of the most expensive care that we in our state offer. So preventative care is a much wiser use of money. But we'll see how that all plays out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we only have about 5 minutes left here, Mark. And again, thanks for taking time to get with us. But I wanted to touch base on some of the important issues that you identified that you want to work on personally in the legislature, this session. One of them is highway safety. And what are you looking for there in terms of identifying traffic-related projects and improvements, specifically for our district, I guess?
Well, traffic, you know, the actual the shovel to the ground type improvements, they're slow. Public works project, that whole process is a slow one. When I attended some traffic meetings this summer, we always keep it, you drive around your district, so we're all aware of, potholes or different road issues. So I attended some meetings. We talked about what could be done for the corridor from Sandpoint up to the Canadian border. I've met with ITD people in our area. I've also had a meeting with the ITD staff here in Boise on one of my trips down here this summer. Made sure they knew that we really wanted some projects done, some widening, some signage, just some work done on that corridor especially. But I also learned that in 2018, the legislature decided to stop taking away people's driving privileges due to traffic infractions that were not settled, not paid.
So unpaid traffic fines, yeah.
Right, traffic fines. Since then, when they put that in place, there was $1 million in back traffic fines that had never been collected. Now we sit at, that number is more like $21 million, and we have lots of people that drive on our roads that just don't pay their fines because they know that it's a traffic citation, and civilly they may owe it, but they know they're not going to lose their driver's license. And when we talk about driver safety, that's an issue. If people know, or if some people know and want to take advantage of that, they don't have to care that much about how they drive. And I think there's ways we can work on it. I've already got a bill started to repeal that. And I've met with ISP. I've talked to people in our court, to the county prosecutors, and to our law enforcement people, and they're all saying, hey, why can't we bring back some consequences for aggressive drivers? And we're certainly going to, I'm bringing that, trying to get it all dialed in now so I can present it. But a $20 million shortfall in this day and age seems to be reasonable to try and fix that leak. Get some better highway safety. So those are two different issues, but they're all traffic, transportation related. And then Senator Woodward and I are going to meet with ITD, and I think it's like a town hall on the last Friday in January, and I think it's up in Bonners Ferry, but to talk with them about what other projects that they're talking about bringing for that corridor. So we'll do that at the end of January.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. He continued, lots of work to do, but we're trying to get some things changed and to make things better.
Okay, to get on to another bill that you're interested in submitting, or some legislation you'd like to push, and that is to increase the amount of the homeowner's exemption. What is it currently, and what would you like it to go to?
It's $125,000 now. When it was implemented, I can't tell you the year that it was implemented, The concept was that it would be about half of the assessed valuation for a house in the state. It started out as it quickly got to $100,000, and then a few years ago we raised it. It was raised to $125,000. We've done some work on replacing some of that tax money with sales tax money, but it still hasn't really addressed it. So my recommendation is that we double it, that we go to 250, and that's going to be a negotiable item. But if you just index that $100,000 to $125,000 over the course of the homeowner's exemption since it's been implemented, the numbers come out to right at 250. So that's what I'm shooting for, is to bring it to that, and we'll see what kind of votes I can get and see if we can get some hearings on it. But another part of that is the assessed valuation. Right now, it's on a year-to-year basis, so homeowners can see quite a spike in their property tax all of a sudden. And what I'm asking with one of my bills is to have that average over a few years to kind of dull that spike. So it's something that I think everybody anticipates. Costs continue to go up a little bit at a time, but it's that spike, I think, that really gets people's attention, especially people that are on a fixed income, So we need to be careful with that. So if we can deal with that rise as well as the total amount, I think that would be helpful. So summary is, I'm saying let's average it over 3 to 5 years for an assessed value, and let's go to 250. And I'll work on that. I'm working on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, Representative Souter. I've got time to squeeze in one more here if we only spend a minute or two on it. You are working with Senator Jim Woodward to draft a bill to clarify a health of the mother exception to the Defense of Life Act that the legislature passed previously. This is concerning women's health care. Tell us briefly what your goal is.
The summary is to get more doctors and health care workers in our area. The number one complaint that our doctors bring to us is the clarity and of the women's health, the health of the mother exception for an abortion. And what we've done is take language right out of the Adkins decision and put it into our Defense of Life Act section of code. So it's clear. We're not changing. The court's already ruled on the Defense of Life Act and how it impacts our healthcare. What we're trying to do is get that in the statute instead of having it just as a court opinion. And all the doctors that I've spoken with have all said that would make a big difference for retention and recruitment of doctors and healthcare workers. It would really clarify what the state statute means, so they can provide the services to our women and our families. So you can say it cuts both ways, but to add clarity to our statute would be a big relief for our doctors. And I think it's something that we really need to look at. And I've had so far when I've talked to people in the legislature, a lot of people are, really perks their ears up. They said, hey, let's do something that we can help our women's healthcare system in our state.
Mm-hmm. You consult with anybody with Bonner General Health on this? Bonner General reduced their maternity and delivery services.
No, I have not asked anybody at Bonner General. I've spoken mostly with the doctors in our area. We have OBGYNs across the state that I've spoken with the interest in, how do we increase the numbers of doctors? Right now, I think, I don't think we have any OBGYNs that are just in our area, and our maternal fetal specialists have also left town. So I've really focused more on the doctor part of it. Labor and delivery is another part of this. If they don't get the OBGYNs, it's hard for them to staff that unit. And also if they don't get Medicaid money for their patients, that's another issue. So labor and delivery, that unit itself is another piece. Right now I'm working on the doctor part and the healthcare worker part.
Okay, well, we are officially out of time. Mark Souter, you're our representative in the Idaho legislature, which at this airs kicked off on Monday. Any last word you'd like to throw out?
I'm all ears for people. If people would like, they can certainly email me at msauter@house.idaho.gov, and whatever is on their mind, or if they'd like to follow up with things, that's really the best way to get a hold of me. There's an office phone in the Capitol, but honestly, I'm not around that very often, and it's hard to keep up with a phone call. But if somebody wants to send me an email, I'll follow up on it, whether it's behavioral health or women's health care or taxation. I like to get information from home, and so I can try and follow up on it.
Well, Representative Souter, thanks for taking time to speak with us.
You're very welcome.